cycle jerks.
Hey, get out of the road, dummy.
Cycle Jerks Podcast.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Cycle Jerks Podcast, episode 104. I'm joined today, as always, by Dave Dalton. How you doing, Dave?
Good to see you. Good to see you again, Mike.
Yeah.
It's been a long time.
Yeah, we recorded one yesterday too. So getting our fill of each other. Today's guests, we're gonna be joined by riding buddies that have rode across America, mostly self-supported. Chris Ditmore and Matt Swinnerton. And then they had such a good time. I guess they went from the Canadian border down to through into Mexico through California. They've had some great adventures on the bikes, and I'm going to talk to them about it.
Yeah, I think it'd be a great story. They're local. I think Chris is in Tennessee now, but they're local boys.
Okay.
And every year they did the Tour de Tahoe, which they would just organize this kind of, ride around. They had a house up in Tahoe and they'd ride around it. Somehow out of that came riding across the U.S. So I've known him for a long time. So it should be a pretty interesting story.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I've always kept that in the back of my mind of doing something like that. I had a buddy of mine that was going to ride to all of the baseball parks in America. And he was going to take a year. And he was going to, basically ride all across the country, visit the parks. And his idea was he would get postcards. He was trying to get sponsors, people that would invest in him. Okay. And then he would send a postcard to everybody that from each ballpark as he would do these trips. That was his idea. It never came to be. But I thought it was a pretty cool idea.
Oh, it was a great idea. Postcard. Yeah. How long ago was that?
It was a long time ago. Yeah. Maybe 30 years ago. So since he kind of put that in my head, I always kind of had that idea of like maybe riding across country and it'd be really, really cool. And of course, race across America,
Yeah. As a matter of fact, race across America is what got me thinking about this. There's just kind of, there may be another guest I'm trying to get on too, and hopefully it won't get too repetitive, but I think there's a progression, right? You have the race across America and they have their own challenge, right? Which is they're just hammering to be first, but they're supported, right? I mean, if you need be, you climb in a van, you take a nap, somebody gives you food, right? You have a mechanical, boom. These guys, they were together, right? But on their own. Then you go one step further. I met a guy that came in the shop, and he rode across the U.S. completely by himself. And his wife met him like once in Chicago or someplace like halfway in the Midwest, and gave him a new kit, and then he went on his own. Right, so he was fully loaded up. Right.
Wow.
And so you want to talk about by so I don't know, like in my simple brain, I see this kind of logical progression from self-supported to, hey, at least we've got each other, to I'm out here all by myself.
Right. I was going to say, doesn't sound like a very good relationship with his wife.
Yeah.
She's going to let him go for however long that takes and just give him one kit.
Yeah, but it was a tribute to his dad who had done it a few years prior.
Wow, that's cool.
Prior, so it was kind of cool.
Yeah.
But speaking of out there on your own, did you watch Marie's?
Yes, the chasing, Marie Soleil Blaise, two-time former guest. She chronicled the Tour Divide race that she did, and I think she did a great job with it. What a crazy race. 20 straight days. It was 20 straight days that she did. And she said she averaged 226K a day. So that's 140 miles of off-roading every single day for 20 days.
Yeah.
That's gnarly. I
I
don't care who they
yeah
are.
and so it's on YouTube, right?
Yeah.
Chasing
Yep.
yeah, so folks,
You really have to
I
type it in. Because if you
yeah.
type in chasing, it doesn't come up. I chased in chasing a tour, it still didn't come up. You got to type in chasing a tour divide, and then it finally
Yeah.
comes up. Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, it's definitely well worth the time and the investment. If you're ever wondering about your mental fortitude to push on, this is that's kind of, I mean, you could tell there was one moment she was just sitting there talking and telling what was going on, and she just broke down in tears,
Yep.
but then she just said, I got to get going, right?
Right.
And you talk about the terrain. I remember that one, like, I forget the name of the hill because I was going to email her about it, but it was like on
I know, it's
day
so
one,
terrible.
and she had to walk, push her bike all the way up the hill. It was unridable. I don't care. She had a mountain bike, but it was just rocks. I'm like,
Yeah.
I think I'd have given up on that day,
Well, one of my favorite parts of the documentary was there's a point near the end where she's there, a couple salient, really poignant moments in the doc. One was when she was acknowledging that she had given up her road career, this opportunity, and she had given up on a dream, and it hit her. And she was crying and talking about it. I could really relate to that because she's conflicted, so for 20 years she's pursued this thing, and now she's getting called by the trail to do this other thing, and but it still hurts to let go of a dream. And anyway, so that was
Yeah, because she said at some point during it, she said, I should be right now, I should be at this, right? I mean, because she told the team, I'm not going. This is my
right.
calling now.
Yep. Yeah. And then the other one, when she's near the end and she says, I did this to find my breaking point. And she's like, right. She's like, I found it. I found it, And so I think anybody that's ever, I've had a couple moments like that, where I just felt like, okay, this is it. I've broken. And yeah, it's humbling when that happens to you. But
The
yeah.
one, yeah, that I know you want to talk about CX Worlds too, but the one last, and then we got to plug Lean, our sponsor.
Keep wanting to get the name right, Dave.
Yeah, I know. But lean athlete strength, but it's early.
Yeah.
But there was another time at which I think she kind of resigned herself to the fact that, like, she had a goal, like, I'm hoping to be, third or something. And then at some point she said, I'm resigned. She resigned to her place, and she says, I'm just going to enjoy the last like 75K. And it was so gorgeous
Right.
that I can't help but to think you have to look back on that and go, okay, I want to go do it again, but I just want to go and take in the scenery, because it was incredible scenery. So
Yeah, but
I
20
don't know.
straight
Well worth
days, 20 straight days, it's kind of like, meh. Especially if you're smoked
Oh,
physically,
another mountain lion. Oh well,
Yeah.
whatever.
Yeah,
So,
it was great. I really enjoyed it. I think I would have enjoyed it even if we hadn't had Marie on. That's how good it was. But it was kind of a little extra special just knowing her, her backstory and everything about her. I felt, I feel connected to her, and then to see the doc, it was just really, really cool.
yeah, I hope I didn't overstep at all, but she mentioned how bad do you want it? So I took the liberty of introducing her to Matt on social media and just said, hey, I watched the video, great thing, great shout out to how bad do you want it? You really should talk to Matt Fitzgerald. I mean, she in how bad do you want it, number two,
Right.
volume two, she should be in there,
Yeah.
right?
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. All right. So let's talk about CX World. I mean, So Vanderpool dominates the event for his sixth world title in cyclocross, and then also on the women's side, Fen Van Empel, she won for the second straight year. So the Dutch dominate the
What?
world.
So I got some time on my hands. Where do I watch it?
So I don't know if you can watch it on Cycling News. I think you can get the clips on YouTube, but
Okay.
I don't think the whole race might be up on YouTube. I couldn't find the whole race. I just got the clips.
Oh, all
But
right.
between the two of them, they won like 29 of the 32 cyclocross races this year, between Vanderpool and Van Empel. I mean, we're talking complete domination by both of them.
Yeah.
And Vanderpool says there's speculation that this might be Vanderpool's last because he's wants to focus. He's talking about focusing more on road. But I don't know. We'll see. As the season comes to a close, his mindset's shifting to road. We'll see what
Yeah.
happens next season.
Yeah, I wondered. I don't know. This is just without evidence. I just kind of wondered. So much focus had been on Wout Van Aert and his dominance and how strong he was on the road. And it just seemed like Vanderpool wasn't quite the road guy that Wout Van Aert was. And I thought,
Well,
well, has his and then all of a sudden he comes back and just dominates the cross
yeah.
season, right?
Well, I th Vanderpool was coming off an injury. Remember, he wrecked at the Olympics, and he had, I
Oh,
mean, you
yeah.
have to remember, I mean, he was in yellow in the tour, left the tour to race the mountain bike in the Olympics. Then he crashes, blows up his back. And so, like, he was on a, he wasn't himself for a big chunk
Yeah.
of his comeback. And then it seemed like even with the success of the team and Jasper, he was Jasper's point man
Right, right.
in the tour last year, and Jasper had an amazing success. But the I think I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see where he's where it shakes out this year, because obviously he's got great form now. And when he's right, I mean, he's one
Yeah,
of the best there
yeah,
is. So,
yeah. And then we said goodbye to Steve, Zenek Stibar. Retired, right? This was his last season. Yeah.
And then the other thing that happened on the World Tour stage was Simon Yates. He won the Tour of Alula.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is
Yeah.
kind of cool because Alula is the sponsor of their team. Jayco Alula. So yeah, it's cool to see him get a victory. And it was like in the final climb, he was 3 seconds behind the leader. It was like a sprint finish, and he ended up winning it and got 10 seconds, 10 second bonus. The leader got third. He got a 4 second bonus. And so he ended up winning by 3 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that's incredible. I like those two brothers. I mean
Oh yeah.
I think they're great. I think they're great in itself, but as support riders and that kind of thing, and I'm always rooting for the support rider, but I think they do a great job. I was a little surprised in the tour down under when they came to, the big climb. Everyone has expected him to come back and that, to dominate again, and
Yep.
he didn't.
Right.
And I was like, oh man. So I was really excited to see that he had won that one. So
Well, you never know, when I mean, we saw it last year in the tour with Remco,
yeah.
I mean, there's just some days you have it. I mean, those guys are so finely tuned that most days they have it, but every
Yeah.
once in a while, it's just not there. But
So just say it, Mike. Was he on a Propel?
yes, he was. Go figure.
I'm glad my TCR was outside of range and can't hear me. I love my TCR, but
Yep.
that Propel, don't tell me it's not a climbing bike.
Oh,
Don't
right.
tell me it.
It's a one bike to slay them all.
Yeah,
That's what it is. Yeah.
that's right.
So,
So,
all right, let's talk about lean athlete strength
yeah,
and
lean athlete strength. So I'll post it later. So this is kind of it, but she had posted a video, which like she had a post, and it was just kind of struck me. Like she gets me, right? Like I don't know about you, and I think most hardcore cyclists, we go away for something. We have to do a trip, and it's like, what am I going to do? I'm off the bike. I need to work out. I just need to work out, and she posted this video, and I'll post it, but I think she just gets us, right? And I've always said it's about, she understands endurance athletes. Well, this was called a total body shred. If you're traveling and don't have like a you're in a hotel that doesn't have a gym, or doesn't have a or has a shitty gym, or maybe you've just got two little dumbbells. So she had this 20-minute workout where you do these squats, you do these mountain climbers, you do this bench curl, this curl, military press thing. So 20-minute workout if you're traveling, total body shred. So it was pretty cool. I mean, I didn't do it. I just she sent me the video last night. So but I'll post it, but it's on YouTube under, I think it's under Dara Sport. But look up lean athlete strength, and it's just something to keep in mind, because it's all going to happen to all of us, right? We got to go to a wedding, we've got to, or it's pouring rain and we don't want to get back on the trainer. What can I do to do something?
I
So
struggle with that when I travel. I have a hard time getting motivated for, ride. I ironically riding an exercise bike or doing some treadmill stuff or anything like that.
no,
Yeah,
exactly.
I always
And
struggle.
this is and that's the thing, right? I always say, okay, this is good that I'm traveling because it forces me to rest. And that works for a day, but then I'm bored and I want to do something. And this is a 20-minute right in your hotel room. Just knock it out.
Yeah. All
So,
right. Well, check it out. Lean Athlete Strength. She's got a bunch of
wig.
free content and then also some options for you if you want to get a little bit more serious about it.
Way to go, Dara.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Hey, we're joined by one of our two guests today, Matt Swinnerton. Matt, it's good to meet you.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Doing good. What is that behind you there? That's
That
pretty
is Mount
spectacular.
Shasta. That is
Oh
Mount
yeah.
Shasta on the way back from coming back from Bend, Oregon to Northern California. So yeah,
So are you in your car? You in your car and looking out the window? That's what are you?
that's what I wish it
Oh.
was. I'm actually in Bend, Oregon. I'm visiting my mom and dad lived up here. My dad passed away in 2019, but I'm up here visiting my mom, and my brothers are up here to have a little fun, do a little skiing, and I love
Okay.
Mount Shasta. It's a spectacular
Nice.
place.
It
So,
really is. Yeah. As an outside rep, I actually serviced Mount Shasta. I had a dealer in Shasta.
oh, you did.
Yeah, the Fifth Season they're called. And
Nice.
yeah, so I spent a fair amount of time riding around Mount Shasta and up as high as I could get. It's always
Yeah,
weathered.
they have some incredible mountain bike trail systems up there now. I mean,
Yeah.
just I just did the Grinduro up there last year and fell in love with the town of Mount Shasta and the riding. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm embarrassed to say I've never been.
Yeah, well
Oh,
you should be
Dave.
embarrassed. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, and now we're joined by the second guest today, Chris Ditmore. Chris, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too, Mike.
Yeah. All
Hey,
right.
Chris.
Hey Dave, hey Matt.
How are you?
Just fine, thank you.
Yeah.
Are you in Tennessee?
Yes, I'm in Nashville right now.
Okay.
I'm here with the grandson.
And
Oh, okay.
what you can only get a glimpse of is over Chris's right shoulder, I guess that is
Yeah.
there's actually a painting of the United States map with his trip across the country. Is that epic or what?
That is cool. That's awesome.
Whoa, wait. You said it's the route that you guys took across the...
Yeah, so there's both routes on here. There's the route across the country, and then way over here on the West Coast is the route.
Yeah.
So in 2018, we rode from Canada to Mexico down the coast.
Yeah.
I was telling Mike about that. So you didn't just do that for this podcast, right?
That's so big. No.
He hasn't slept in 4 days. No.
I'll bet you crammed for final exams in college too, right?
Yeah. Well, what Dave and I were talking before you guys got on about just the concept of riding across the country. It's something that I've thought about, never done, and we've had Ram participants on the show in the past, and that's another thing. Like, maybe I end up doing it that way. I don't know. That would be really cool to do, but that's totally different than what you guys did. You for the most part, you self-supported yourself all the way across. Is that right?
That's how you define self-support. If you define self-support as a sag wagon with friends and family, then you bet.
Oh, right. Okay.
Did they follow you the whole way?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And so were you staying in hotels or camping?
We stayed in hotels. We had a fresh shower every night. And,
okay. Well, Matt, let's qualify that. Let's say motels more like.
Oh yeah.
Super 8 was our friend. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Right. I do have friends who think a Super 8 is a form of camping. So,
Well, see, that really works. Okay. That works more for my mindset. Like, I can't ever see myself sleeping. I'm doing something so extreme and then also being extreme with just your rest. I would need to get a hotel and a shower and a reboot, you know, for these epic days, you know, ahead. And yeah, that is something I could see myself doing.
Yeah. Because guys, I'm sorry to cut you off, Matt, but I was telling him that there was another guy that launched from the West Coast and rode across the East, rode cross country to honor his father. This guy was totally loaded up. And I got it wrong. I thought you guys had just periodically, your wives had joined you at certain spots to come along. But this guy went totally on his own. His wife met him midway to give him a new kit, right? And then she left him, and then he went and rode himself. He had saddlebags that were loaded with tents and gear and whatever else he needed, but otherwise totally self-supported. I couldn't do that. I think I could do what you guys did. So,
you know, I'll tell you what, there's a great in between, actually. My wife and I, 2 years ago, rode the Eurovelo network over in France and Germany and Amsterdam, and we carried our own gear, but we stayed in like bed and breakfast and motel and little hostels and stuff in Europe. So we carried our own gear, but we didn't camp. And that's a big, like when we were in Europe, I saw a lot of people with e-bikes with camping gear and stoves and food, because you got to haul so much more.
Yeah.
So there's kind of like, there's so many different ways to do it, right? Another way to do it like Matt and I did, which was great. And, you know, we had a car, we had beer and wine and food and motel rooms. And then, you know, anyway, so.
Well, so let's rewind, because in the interest of full disclosure, I started mountain biking with you guys. God, I'm sorry, Mike, but it was a Trek 6500. So I don't know, it was marginally a mountain bike. And that's how I met you guys. And then you, for years, would do this ride around Lake Tahoe.
Yep.
Right? Mm-hmm. Every year, big deal. Come up to Chris's cabin, food, again, supported and a whole bit. Where did this idea of riding across the country come about? Because I know you talked about it for years.
Matt's dad.
No kidding.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the the my dad rode across the country in 1994, I think that's right. Yeah, and so he and I actually rode my wife and I rode a section of the trip with him when he was up, and when I was up in Wisconsin, and so we did a week of that trip, and I was like, I want to do this someday. You know, it was just, he did it with two buddies right after they retired. My mom was his saddle wagon. This was pre-GPS, pre-cell phone. So they camped some, they stayed in hotels some. But yeah, that idea was the inspiration. And then Chris and I started riding together when our kids were in kindergarten. And so we'd get up at 5:45 in the morning. We'd go, you know, do a loop, end up at Pete's Coffee, have a chance to talk a lot. And we both like had this idea that riding across the country would be really cool. And then we started kind of hatching ideas like, well, actually we could do this. And when could we do it? Right. And then we just found this moment in time where our kids were both all in college, and then we both engineered work so that we could make it happen. And
what year was it that you did it?
2012. Yeah.
And I would say talking with Matt's dad and Matt's mom really convinced me not to camp.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they
his dad would have stories about, you know, you say, I think Mike, you kind of described, you know, I've ridden 60, 70, 80, 90, 100, whatever in a day. And they would roll into town and sometimes they have to go to this campsite. And they were just, and sometimes Matt's mom, Marianne, had found a motel room. And so they'd hit town not knowing what they were going to do.
No.
Depending upon what Marianne could find. And they were like deflated when it was camping, and ecstatic when it was a motel room.
Yep. Makes perfect sense to me anyway.
Yeah.
So how long does it take? How long did it take you guys from beginning a trip all the way to the end of the trip?
It was 60 days for the route that we chose. I'd say, I mean, you'll find people who will do it in as quickly as a month because we took, you know, the shortest route's just under 3,000 miles. If you go from Southern California across to the Carolinas. But we went from San Francisco and then went north up through, you know, Tahoe, Yellowstone, and then across, and then Lake Erie up to Niagara Falls and finished in Boston.
Well, then we went Iowa to do Ragbri.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we had this kind of jigsaw because we're like, okay, if we're going to do this, there's things we want to see. Like we really wanted to go through Yellowstone.
Yeah.
We really wanted to do Ragbri. As an example, we wanted to go to Niagara Falls, you know, and it was important to us to end in Revere Beach in Boston, where Matt's dad had ended.
Yeah. So. Okay. And we had some highlights like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and a Cubs game at Wrigley Field. And, you know, so we had some dear friends who had a home in Indiana who hosted us for a couple of days on a lake there. So
nice.
Yeah. So all of those things kind of inspired the route.
Hey, yeah. Mike, I'm sorry to have them on as guests. I really thought they roughed it, but here they are.
Yeah, no.
They were going to be our inspiration, but they're going to the Hall of Fame, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and sitting on a lake drinking wine and beer.
Dave, I'll tell you what, at the start of the trip.
Inspirational. That should be aspirational for sure. You
know, mostly we rode back roads, you know, mostly, but to get across Nevada, there are two choices, Highway 50 or Highway 80. And we chose Highway 80 because we wanted to go up to Yellowstone. And riding on Highway 80 is, I would say in the whole trip, I forget what the stats were, but it was something like the whole trip, we had 11 flat tires, 10 of them were on Highway 80 in Nevada.
All
that little metal from the radial tires.
Yeah, of the trucks.
But conversely, The truck drivers were so cool. They would see us, you know, and it's a big shoulder on Highway 80. They would always get over in the fast lane because they knew they created the draft. So we were, you know, anyway.
Yeah.
But during Highway 80, it was like, oh man, what have we done? And then once we got off of Highway 80 and we're off into nature and the beauty and the back roads and the small towns, it was spectacular.
Right. Right.
Yeah. That's so cool.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, you guys mixed in Ragbri, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, a Cubs game, all these things I mean, I could just see how much more meaningful they are because of the whole trip, right?
Yeah.
Like we could, I've been to Wrigley Field and it was awesome. And it was a cool thing to do, but it was nothing like riding my bike to Wrigley Field, you know, in the middle of this epic cross country trip. And oh man, that just, that's cool. I mean, that's the way to take 60 days, like to your point, where you could do it in 30, but why do it in 30? Take 60, do the things that are important to you, Niagara Falls, et cetera. That's awesome, man.
I concur, Mike. I think if the goal is to get across the country and so you do it in 30 days, right? Like, oh, okay. So you're sitting there celebrating and you're jumping up and down. All of a sudden you go, ah, shit, but I'll never get to do this again. And I could have stopped here and I could have stopped there. Right. So if you're going to do it the way you guys do it, I think, right.
It was a little bit like, instead of just riding across the country, it was really trying to experience America on a bike and then riding across the country as well. And just having the time to be able to meet some people, experience some things and to have it not just be an incredibly a cool accomplishment, but to have it be a joyful experience. And I got to tell you, man, there was one or two days that were harder than the others, but man, every day was just incredible. So it was fun to have an experience like that. And then Chris had the idea of doing a blog that we that was probably the hardest part of the trip, was like doing the daily blog, because Chris was incredible with being able to, we finished the thing and he'd get on it, and then and then we had all these people following us, you know, from work and all this kind of thing. So we had a shared experience with family, friends, coworkers, and all that sort of stuff. That was just really cool.
Yeah.
We had so many people from work in particular, for both Matt and I, who allowed us to do this. You know, it's not easy to take a job and just leave for 60 days. And so I would say, or work in our family, but even more work, it was like the blog was a way to kind of thank them. For letting us do this, and they could follow it and be a part of it, and so it was great, and you guys have cycled enough to know too, you know. So Matt and I are cycling together for 60 days. There's days that, like, man, I'm feeling awesome, and Matt is not, and vice versa. And I'll never forget, we were in Indiana. We left this house where we had been with friends. Let's just say, as Matt coined it, I had a fun over the night before. And the next day, I get on the bike with Matt, and we would just pace, you know, every 5 minutes we'd rotate. And I got on the front. I'm like, Matt, this is all I got today, man. We're going like 12 miles an hour. And Matt, being such a great friend, is like, Chris, I got you. You just sit in the back today. I will pull you to wherever we're going, 60 miles away. And you'll take care of me later on. You know?
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So did you have like set mileage goals for each day, or was it more like point to point? Like, I want to, on this day, I want to go from here and get, would the destination dictate the mileage of the day, is, I guess, the question?
Yeah. We had mapped out, Matt had done the route, and, you know, Matt did all the route. And back then we used Ride with GPS.
Okay.
To map everything out. And then I was taking care of the lodging logistics. So what we didn't know is how much we were going to have to change it because of weather, primarily, you know, thunderstorm, whatever. But amazingly, we stuck to the route the whole way through. We got fortunate. We never had a big into the wind day. We never had a terrible weather day. And so we were able to stick to our plan. And so that, like, we had days, we rode 155 miles from Tahoe to Lovelock, Nevada one day. That was our longest day. But then we had other days where it was big mountain days, or we'd been riding a bunch of miles. We'd ride like 45 miles because we wanted to go see the, you know, rock and roll, you know, whatever it was. So we tried to balance it out a little bit. Like, we, you know, we'd cycled enough to know if we had a big day, then maybe we needed an easier day the day after. We always took one day a week off for things, logistics like laundry, tuning. You know, Matt was great about washing and tuning all the bikes and whatnot.
The lake house in Indiana. Lake house in Indiana would be a good day to take off.
Yeah, well, that was, you know, and it's funny you say that because that's what kind of what we did. We Jackson Hole, that was a place we took a day off.
Yeah.
You know, day off in Indiana. You know, we took a day off right before Ragbri. You know, so yes, we did try and took a day off, I think, in Niagara Falls. You know, so we tried to make sure that the day off was, you know, kind of a
meaningful.
A meaningful place, yes.
rather than in a Super 8 motel in Ottumwa, Iowa, where there's nothing to do.
Right. Yeah. No, we were very strategic in our choices, and it was because usually we were able to. It was a time where we could connect with friends. We had people who were SAG support, and that swapped over the course of the trip. And so sometimes they would come and on a rest day, and then we'd, you know, switch out the team, so to speak, and get refreshed and all that. So it was they were usually needed, you know, after 6 days of riding, but we usually found some place because we also had an extra day in Tahoe when we started early on, rode to Lovelock, the 155 mile ride, and then spent a couple of days in Tahoe before we headed out. And
so it was, you said you swapped out your team, but so for those 6 days there's a car following you. And mm-hmm. they meet and they come into town with you, and you've got a place to swap out shit and stuff like that.
Yeah, so there's, you know, always, so there was always someone. All that, you know, extra stuff like tires and, you know, wheels,
tubes, and
we didn't know what we were going to need. And then, of course, all our clothing and whatnot. But early on, we kind of realized that we didn't need them to follow us. And so we'd be like, right. All right, well, you guys go see whatever site you want to go see, and we'll meet for blah, you know. And I'll let Matt explain the whole B2 thing, but we'd have breakfast, then we'd have B2, then we'd have lunch, you know, because we were eating a lot. And so we would meet them occasionally. They would meet us for that. But I'll let Matt tell you about the B2.
Who is them, though? Because it's a big ask, right? You said you asked work, right? Like, give me 60 days. And then you got to turn to friends and family and say, okay, listen, this is what I need from you, right?
Right.
You need to go to your work and take X number of days off to follow me while I have fun on a bike, right? So who were the support people?
Well, we had a whole combo, and it was funny, Chris. I don't, there was a couple people we had to really encourage, maybe strongly, including my wife. But I would say more so we had people who like, hey, I want to do this, you know, this would be really fun. Cause we had, you know, my wife and Chris's wife, they were the early first leg folks up to Tahoe. And then we had, some friends of Chris and Brenda's, that Chris had, or that Brenda had worked with, you know, two childhood friends, right, Chris?
Yeah.
Who wanted to have an adventure together. And so they said, hey, we'll do that. We'll do a leg. And they got us to Jackson Hole from Tahoe. And then we had Chris's in-laws join us for a pretty good leg as well.
Wow.
Christopher, why don't you fill in the latter part of it? Yeah.
Yeah. And then after that, Brenda came out, and Brenda rode Ragbri with us. And Brenda's my wife. And then in Ragbri, she sagged. And then it was just a confluence of Matt's wife, Cindy, my wife, my daughters, Matt's daughter. Our sons were nowhere to be found, but our daughters.
they didn't think this sounded cool. They thought this whole thing sounded stupid.
Well, guys are selfish, right? I mean, you know,
right?
Most I get it. Young guys, a little bit more selfish.
But I got to just real quick. I got to go back to the B2 thing because this is something we also learned from Matt's dad.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So Matt, tell about the
B2. Yeah. So. When my dad did this trip across the country, he wrote this book, They Passed This Way, and he was documenting this thing. They'd start in the morning, they'd get a good breakfast, but then they always had to find some place, usually 20 to maybe 30 miles into the ride, to have a second breakfast, right? Because he and his two buddies loved breakfast. And so the ride was really around, you know, what you have to start, but where are we going to have second breakfast? And then we're going to have lunch, and then we're going to have food. And so we quickly adopted the idea because, you know, when you're riding, we average 80 miles a day, you know, you burn a lot of calories. And and I had people go, how much weight did you lose over the course of the ride? And I'm like, oh, none. That was not a goal. The goal is how many pancakes can you eat when you're 49 years old and maybe across the country. Yeah. So that was always.
Would that be a short stack, sir? Oh, no.
Well, actually, Dave, you know, what's funny about that is early on, I'd say the first week of the trip, we didn't adjust that way. And we just kind of ate how we normally eat. And all of a sudden, we both kind of realized, you know what? We're not putting enough calories in. We've kind of, by us doing this every single day, and because you know how it is when you're working and you're at home, you maybe ride like 20 miles a day on the weekdays because that's all you get into work. And then on a weekend, you do the long ride. Well, all of a sudden, we're doing long rides every day. Uh-huh. Quickly, we kind of realized we had to up our calorie intake or it wasn't going to work. So conversely, it was a little hard at the end to reduce our calorie intake.
Oh, I bet.
My God. Yeah, that was.
Yeah, no more B2s.
Yeah, right.
So what was the, did you guys lock in, like you're talking about pancakes, were you locked in on pancakes at every stop, or was it I'm going to have a ham and cheese omelet every damn day, or did you guys mix it up, or was it the same old, same old?
No, I would say it was more mixed up because you had to operate based on what was available, first of all. And then, you know, everybody, if you're ridden long enough, you find the things that work well digestively and energy wise and all that kind of stuff. So you try to find your groove. I think the thing that was the most common at the end of the was usually, I would say, the post ride recovery, which is usually finding some place that had good beer.
I don't know, that might be bro science on that, that's probably bro science.
Yeah,
I would say most mornings, because we were staying in a Super 8, usually. I mean, it was just the way it was, easy, you know. It's like, it was a bed, it was a hot shower, it wasn't terribly expensive, so it was and they're all across the middle of the country,
right?
So that usually meant breakfast was a banana and oatmeal, and then B2 was more your nicer.
Oh, okay.
You're stopping at a restaurant somewhere, you know, but there were days in Nebraska when it was 100 and something degrees every day.
Yeah.
And you were like, we got to be on the road at sunrise. We got to be on the road at 5:30. You know, we got to be on the road because we got to be done by 1 o'clock or 12. And that came into account too sometimes.
Sure.
You just raised a great question. I do want to backtrack in a minute though, because you said, when you're at home, you ride 20 miles and a long one on the weekend. I want to know what it took to train to prepare to ride that, right? But I want to make sure we go back to that. But I am very interested in the daily routine, right? So is it most mornings you were up like the crack of dawn, is it, or you just adjusted that it's like, oh, it's going to be freaking hot, let's get going, or you know, what was the routine,
Matt?
Yeah, no, I'd say, you know, in terms of the daily thing, we were I think Chris's father-in-law described it the best. He goes, like, they were very professional. But I would say we were very disciplined and planned around, like, okay, we'd know what the route is. We know what the weather was going to be. And we were generally up and tried to be out by, you know, somewhere between 7 and 8 o'clock in the morning most days. Okay. Cause we're trying to get a lot of riding in before the heat of the day. Cause we started in June 21st, I think was the date. And so, you know, we're going to be 60 days right in the heat of the summer and then try to be done by between 1 and 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And so, we get up, you know, make sure the bikes are taken care of and we'd be on our way. And luckily Chris and I are both morning people. So that part was really easy. We enjoy riding in the morning. And so that was the plan.
So yeah, I'd never say, going west to east turned out to be, for two.
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah. Multiple times we would run into people riding their bikes east to west, and they were constantly giving us stories about having to ride into a headwind. You know, it's not always that way. I mean, that is, the trade winds tend to go that way, but not always.
Yeah.
Like, I remember we were in Wyoming and we saw this woman, and she just looked defeated, and she's like, "Oh my goodness, I've been riding in the wind for like 20 days."
Oh,
we'd get up and we're like, we'd have like, "Well, you went the wrong way."
Yeah, yeah. That's the note to self: if you ever decide you want to ride across the country, west to east for sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
I have heard that from multiple sources. There's one guy that does my old shop rides. He said the same thing. He said it was just constant battle into the wind.
Yeah.
Did you ever have a day where you just you got up, you opened the blinds, you look out and say, "No, fuck that, I'm not doing it." Right? Like, I'm not going out there in that weather. Or
yeah, we did. Remember, Matt? We were in Illinois.
Yeah.
And it was a huge thunderstorm, which tended to hit in the afternoon, right? So, like, we would try and be done. Like, we had a day riding into Erie that. Pennsylvania, that like, okay, we got to get out of here early because the storm's going to roll in. But this day in particular, it was a morning thunderstorm. And so we just hung in the hotel or motel until about 11 or 12 o'clock, finally cleared. And we're like, all right, we got 80 miles. We got to go hammer now, you know,
right,
and get there. But that was the only big day I remember that.
Yeah. The weather was a big part of the cross country story because, you know, I coined myself Moses Matt because my job was to part the clouds and make sure we didn't have rain.
No pressure.
And, and actually, I think we were able to avoid having to ride in the rain.
Yeah,
I think every day because we either planned around it or we just had days where we saw it coming and we're like, okay, we're going to get in front of it, and we had incredible luck. And days where we literally landed at the hotel and then a deluge happened. Rochester, New York was the best place for that.
Yeah.
We're just, you can see the clouds chasing us and all of a sudden we pull in and then boom. So,
That's amazing. That's amazing luck.
It is. Chris got really tired of me and my Moses Matt stories after all. Like, see, Chris, look what I'm doing here, man.
Yeah.
I didn't get as tired of it though as your wife got really tired of it.
That's right. That's true. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm thinking your wives are really good sports to really do the sag. I'm picturing like trying to present this to my wife as like a concept, loosely. Like, I would never even think of doing this, but hey, check this out, you know, and then trying to get to a spot where like maybe I could convince her to drive a leg. I don't know, man.
Let me just put this because Mike, because I have floated the notion. We talked about it with Claire, right?
Uh-huh.
About recreating the California AIDS ride and doing it, right? And she's like, "Yeah, you know, beyond Santa Barbara, there's really not that much. So why don't you just do a 4-day thing to Santa Barbara, right, or something like that?" And I was like, "Yeah." And I looked at Sue and I'm like, "Hey, wouldn't that be cool? Like, we'll do that and you can drive, you know, I'll get a couple people and you could just bring the car and tag along." She just was like, "No."
Let's be really clear. Absolutely not. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. My wife would be like, "Who are you talking to right now? Are you talking to me?"
Okay. Mike and Dave, I'm going to help you out here.
Oh,
okay. Our second ride we did was from Canada to Mexico. We started in Vancouver and, you know, whatever. On that ride, we had we had five of us who rode to Tahoe and then anyway. So we had Matt's wife, my wife, Mike Franzen, you know the Franzens, Dave, Mary, they all sat. So now all of a sudden,
the whole trip,
party. You're like, you have the five guys riding, but now during the day, the women who they were trying to decide whether they're going to ride or not, and they said, "No, we're not going to ride. We're just going to have fun every day." So they had their own thing every day. We were blessed because they were taking care of us and, you know, hauling all of our gear for us.
Yeah.
So the single SAG's a little hard to sell, but the friend,
yes,
is right. A little bit easier to sell.
Yeah.
All right.
And I could see for a shorter trip. You could get a group to maybe commit to it, but for across the country, 60 days.
Yeah.
There will be a special place in heaven for both of our spouses for sure.
Right.
But remember they did it for the first 6 days and then they both had a pretty big break. Brenda was with us for longer than my wife, Cindy. And then Cindy joined us at the end. And you know, and there were some things happening in our lives, my wife and I's lives, that were hard while we were gone and that kind of thing. So it was, but I think, you know, they both kind of listened to Chris and I talk about this adventure for a long time. And, you know, my wife and I had ridden through Europe when we were younger. And so she got it. And Brenda's up for like anything that sounds like a great adventure. I'd say, Chris, don't you think, yeah. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's so cool.
Wow.
Now, it sounds like Brenda's a cyclist. Now you, Matt, you just mentioned that you and Cindy rode through Europe, but is she currently a cyclist as well?
Not currently. I mean, she still thinks of herself, I think, that way, but she hasn't been out. She had a knee injury when she was a number of years ago and that kind of thing. So, but we're going cycling. We're doing a cycling trip in Italy this summer. So she's like, yeah, I'm gonna, and she's just decided that, you know, riding an e-bike isn't a crime. So, you know, she's hopping on an e-bike and gonna go through Southern Italy this summer. So, but trying to get her out to, hey, Cindy, let's go go for a 20-mile ride. She's like, why don't you go do that by yourself?
Yeah. Yeah,
but where's Chris? Go have Chris do that with you. Yeah.
At least she gets she understands cycling on a level. Like challenge for me is my wife doesn't understand it. She doesn't see the, she doesn't understand it. She just has no,
no joy.
Yeah. She rides an e-bike. She rides an e-bike to work and stuff. And, you know, but it's really recreational. And I was hoping that when she got the e-bike going, that it might, you know, get her excited and she'd feel this level of accomplishment, or just she would have some different feels that we could explore. And so I decided one day, I said, hey, let's ride up to the lake. You know, we're going to, you know, and she was on board. She's like, okay, yeah. So we went and did it. She's on her e-bike. I'm on my gravel bike. And she just like throttled me the whole way. She's got 28 mile an hour e-bike, you know, and I'm just
right.
Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Like he's trying to talk to me and everything. I'm just like, this is not working out, babe. I'm doing everything I can to hang on, you know, but I thought that experience, it was great for me. I was happy. And then the next weekend, I'm like, hey, you want to go for another ride? She's like, nah, I did that already. It's just it's just over.
Yeah, because cycling was, I mean, it's been a part of my life since I was, you know, in my early teens and doing adventure kind of riding. And when my wife and I met, she got introduced to cycling through me. And then when she graduated from college, independent of me, she went and rode through Europe for a month with some friends and you know, all over France. And so she had a lot of experience with this and had developed her own love of doing cycling adventures, not maybe quite at the same level that I had, but it was, and then, so we rode a ton together when we were first married before our kids were born. I think her biggest thing was, you know, like when Chris and I decided to do this, like, wait a minute, I'm not getting to do this too. Like she probably would have been more, you know, if I had hatched the idea of running across the country, she would have been like, yeah, okay, let's go do that. Well, that was before our kids were born.
Yeah.
then that changed everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's go back to this. Yeah. Let's go back to this training thing. Cause you brought it up again. Why don't you go ride 20? No. Why don't you go do the 20 miles yourself? What does it take to, if I start to float this idea to my wife, since I'm currently unemployed, so I've got lots of time to ride across America. So,
a lot of time.
What does it take? What's the training? You know, how you decide you're going to do it. So count backwards. We start training here and then we know we're launching on this date. What's how far in advance? Well, and then what does it take?
Well, I think there's two trainings. One, training the people you work for that you're going to do this and getting the idea that, like, I'm going to take the time off and actually having the plan to, you know, build and be ready for this. And that's one thing. But the physical part of it, I think, I mean, we really started in earnest, I think almost a year and a half of deciding we're going to do this and then saying, okay, how do we develop our training plan so that we feel ready for it over time. And so we were just ramping up our volume, the riding volume, you know, and the most the 9 months before the trip, Chris, would you agree with that? I was trying to think of
That if you remember in 2011, we did that 100-mile mountain bike race that went up.
That was essentially a year away, right? Bend. Yeah, it was in Bend. Yeah,
but I think what we learned was, in particular on the weekends, we had to get comfortable being in the saddle for 5 to 7 hours, 5 days,
back to back days. Yeah,
you know, and we also had, you know, and you know, when you go out for a ride, I mean, usually you go either 50, 60 miles, whatever it is on a weekend, and then at the end you stop. And we're like, okay, we also have to get used to riding and stopping, which, you know, we never do.
Right.
Suddenly on the weekends, which was actually kind of fun. You know, we'd ride for 20, 25, 30 miles and then go stop. And so, Dave, if we start in Danville, you know, we go down to Livermore and we go like, okay, we're going to go stop here and eat. And then we're going to ride some more. And because, so we're trying to replicate what we're going to be doing.
Yeah. So
it was getting used to starting and stopping.
It was a hardship, man. Like riding to breakfast and then having breakfast and then riding some more.
Yeah, so it was really rough.
Back to back days, like, you know, well, to explain to our wives.
One of my favorites was we rode out to Winty and we had like lunch at Winty. Yeah. You know, which just sounds great. But then it's like, okay, but now I got to go ride 40 more miles.
That's hard to get going again.
Yeah.
Right?
And so we had to, so it wasn't just training for like riding 80 straight miles, but it was training for riding and starting and stopping. And so we did a lot of the weekends were a lot of big rides. Weekdays were just work. You know, both Matt and I traveled for work. So, you know, you just had to kind of work, you know, do what you can do, right?
Yeah, we would try to get like, you know, at least 60 mile back to back on Saturday, Sunday kind of thing. And then maybe get one bigger ride in during the week. And then maybe a couple of smaller ones and that kind of thing. And I remember like the first week of the trip, for me in particular, was, you know, I just trying to get through work and be ready. There was a lot going on. And the first week of the trip was really hard on me. Chris had to, he had to tow me really up to Tahoe. And then even the ride out to Lovelock, Nevada was a rough day. But then after that, you know, all of a sudden the body adjusted and then I was freaking, I felt great the rest of the trip all the way to Boston. And so it was wild how how quickly your body can adjust even when you've got some training volume in.
Yeah. Well, I think it's such a good idea to incorporate the food into your training rides. You know, you don't ever want the first time you're doing something to be during the event you're doing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've done a couple of the Everestings, you know, and I would park my car. So naturally you want to warm up.
I mean, you've done that more than once.
Yeah.
I know. That sounds like the kind of thing you do once and be like, I'm done.
Yeah. Right, yeah. 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 So I've done.
See if you can do it faster.
I have to say this to all our guests on that, but Mike has an unhealthy relationship with his bicycle.
I do. Yes, I do. And my wife shares your opinion too. So that's why the selling of the cross country trip.
Yeah.
Oh my Lord.
Right.
But you know, in preparation for that, you know, you always want to warm up before you start climbing, but in to do an Everest, you need a base camp, right? You got to have like a change of kit, maybe extra shoes, food, water, whatever. So I just started driving to the bottom of the hill, and then I would get out of my car and just go straight up the hill. And it's so different.
So your first lap is your warm up. Yeah.
Yeah. At 7% or whatever, you know? And so, but during the process of the, you know, it's like a battle of attrition in a way, you know, trying to get it all done. And, but having that training, knowing, you know, every five laps I'd come down, I'd eat a certain thing. And I was training that way. And then when I did the event, that's how I was doing it. And you know how your body responds and you know what you need. And so, yeah, that's really good that you would do that. I could see where maybe a lot of people would even like a big dummy like me would think, hey, I'm in shape. I don't need to do anything. I'll just start day one, you know, but you really do need to adjust.
Well, and all the like all the electrolyte drinks and, you know, the whether it's goo packs or other bars and that kind of stuff, everybody finds that thing that essentially your body does well with. And some of them you find like, this is really decent product, but it just does not work for me.
So we
were both very dialed in, I think, by the time we tried did the trip of like, okay, this is what we got to have. And also the recovery at the end of the day, you know, we had the recovery drinks and all those kinds of things so that you could be sustainable over a long period of time.
Brings up a good point. You know, we'd finish and you finish and you get to the hotel and you're unpacking the car but you're also trying to get yourself ready for the next day. And so you'd get the foam roller out, you'd do some yoga, you'd have your post-ride nutrition. And you're, like I said, unloading the car and getting everything ready. And then, you know, you're trying to go to a museum or something because you don't want to, you know, you want to see what the country.
And then write the blog. Got it.
Right.
But it became a whole systematic routine, which, you know, helped. And I think of all the rides we've done like this, you know, having that routine helps tremendously.
Well, and I think also if you talk to anybody who ever has any trouble sleeping, you know, the best sleep therapy is go ride your bike for 80 miles every day. At the end of the day, you will fall asleep hard.
Yeah.
You may be onto something because that's my problem. Yeah. So I'm going to hang up and go ride 80 miles.
There you go, Dave. Yeah.
See, but here's a question. It's actually a two-parter. Now, obviously, this route had some meaning, right? Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, friends in Indiana, Yellowstone, that type of thing. Now, there was a day, if I'm not mistaken, that GPS failed you, right? All of a sudden there was no road or something like that?
No. I was.
All right, Chris, go for it, Chris.
So I didn't appreciate.
Matt, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to bring this up.
This is part of the trip for sure.
This is part of the journey, and I didn't realize how hard it was to plan a route. Which, because when we did Canada, Mexico, I did more of the route planning, so I had a greater appreciation for it later on. But Matt had gone to ride with GPS. I'm thinking, okay, how hard is it? Right. So we're going, and it's all great, and we're up in Idaho. And we're supposed to turn, and we turn, and I go, Matt, that's a dirt road. and this is back in the days before the wider tires. You know, we have like 23 inches tires.
Riding 120 PSI.
And we're like, what the heck? And Matt's, you know, we're looking, we're trying to get reception in Idaho and look at on Ride GPS. And it's just like, well, this is the way it's showing us to go. And so it was just the first time that we came across and realized that the tool we were using didn't always know if it was an asphalt or dirt road.
In fact, we discovered early on that nowadays, if you hop on the navigation tools, they're really good about the different road services and stuff like that. But this is early days with that technology. Like, hey, this is a road. And it was a road, but it was not. We had one or two of those days in Canada, Mexico, too. So we had a couple of times where we had to reroute for sure. In the scheme of the entire trip, the number of days where we actually had to reroute because either the technology was bad, the roads were bad, it was relatively small. Most of the route planning was pretty reliable. And I think today would be even more reliable because of all the technology. Yeah.
But that brings up an interesting question now. So if let's say you're going to recreate this, and you brought it up, right? I mean, I know that you have a gravel bike, Matt.
Yeah.
Would you choose a different weapon? And this way you potentially get to take a different route because you don't care if it's not paved. Like, would you, if you were going to do it over again, would you do it on a gravel bike just so that you, A, didn't have to worry about that, but B, it afforded you the opportunity to go a different road through Yellowstone or a different road through Idaho or something like that? You know, would you think it would add to the trip?
Yeah, I mean, now having ridden the gravel bike a lot, I think there could be a whole nother way to experience the adventure of seeing the country, and particularly around wilderness and around just around the non-human beauty of the whole thing. Now, having said that, I think one of the things that was just the incredible part of the whole trip, other than just seeing the physical beauty of the country and all that stuff, is just the people that we met along the way in these little bitty towns that were just, I mean, they just created some experiences and stories and memories that were just, unreal. Like, you know, all the way from some guy dressed up in a coyote hat, you know, in downtown Sacramento, to being in this little bitty town in, I think it was South Dakota, where my dad had actually gone through that town before. Yeah. And they had the local reporter come and interview us, and for the local newspaper. And so you had, you know, the road connected us to people that was just a huge, it was a rich part of the experience. And so like, you know, the road was really awesome, but the gravel could get you to some places. And also now I think just the whole bike car interface is a bigger challenge today. I don't know if it's just true going across the country, but I feel so much safer when I'm on the trails or the dirt roads rather than out on the highways. I don't know, Chris, how you'd think about that.
Well, Dave, Brendan and I, when we did this Europe ride, I told you about road gravel bikes. And so we gravel bikes, partly because we were hauling our own gear. And so we needed something, a sturdier frame and bigger tires. But we rode on, and in Europe, I mean, like, the Netherlands were amazing. I mean, they were like paved, like amazing bike trails. But the whole way, trails or cobblestone or crushed gravel, very rarely on roads that cars shared, because they have such an amazing bike network over there.
Okay.
But the gravel bike was great for Europe. You couldn't, it was spectacular because we were able to go, like you described, we're able to go routes and places that you couldn't go on a regular road ride, like riding along some of the canals on like a crushed gravel trail or a dirt trail, and then having cobblestones, you know? And so to Matt's point, it like you could definitely do a cross country gravel ride. It would take longer.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It would go appreciably a little bit more. I mean, I definitely know I felt that on the Europe trip, you know, just kind of the, you know, that upper body where it's shaking on the dirt and whatnot. So it's a little bit different experience.
Well, it would be fun. Go ahead.
It would be fun to plan a route and go like, where would this take us? You know, in a way that would be very different. That would be kind of cool, actually.
But I think I wouldn't want to miss that people experience. I mean, my brother-in-law, real quickly, my brother-in-law works for the United States Golf Association, and he had a tournament, I think it was up in Oregon, and he shipped his motorcycle out there. And he doesn't take it on highways. And he rode down to Pebble Beach all on the back roads. And his all back roads. And his biggest story are the small towns that he stopped in and had lunch at a bar and the people that he met. But that was what his biggest memory was. And that's what he shared with us, you know?
Yeah, ask him if he had done that and then he showed up and the equivalent of his underwear at a small town bar, and how we thought that would be versus motorcycle gear. We got some really fun receptions in small towns.
I can imagine.
It was great.
Any bad experience? Because I've heard you don't want to go the southern route. I hear that that's not like it's not as welcoming.
Yeah, no, I think we had a few moments in a couple of bars where we had like some, you could feel a little tension about people, like, but then all of a sudden you get the, like, what are you guys doing here? And you'd start a conversation with people and they were like, oh, this is amazing. You know, then you should go this way and that way. And so I can't think of, I mean, we had a couple of people who looked at us and said, you're out of your freaking mind. What are you doing? That's stupid.
Right.
We had one
experience, and it was early on. I was in Nevada and it was in Carson City. And it was the guys in a truck at the stop sign, and we're coming, and he does the fake pull out.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I remember that, yeah.
And, you know, just the fake pull out where it's like, hey, I'm going to pull in front of you. And it was just, it was obvious he was toying with us, you know, and right. I was like, oh, my goodness, so we have to deal with this the whole way? Uh-huh. And that was it. We never had another experience, anyone trying to run us off the road. And we had heard horror stories about areas in the South. What I've heard more about in the South, from as opposed to the people, it's the dogs.
Oh, yeah.
The issue in the South is the unleashed dogs, and you're on the rural remote roads and the dogs start chasing you.
Right.
And that's like, if you, one of the things that we used for this trip was adventurecycling.org. So if you go to adventurecycling.org, they have a magazine that comes out about people riding all over the world, but they have their whole network, and they were formed back in this bicentennial bike ride in 1976. So we read their publications, used some of their maps to help figure where to go, like where to stop. So they were a great resource for this. But in reading some of that, that's what you'll hear about in the South is just the concern. And again, it has to be more, you know, anywhere you can run into people. But
well, yeah. And I'll give you an example of the absolute opposite of that kind of experience that we had. We were in like rural Nebraska, I think. And we're at a small hotel in a small town, and we're having dinner, and there's like maybe four tables of people eating dinner there. And there's a couple you could see was just sitting over next to us, and we're having a conversation with the waitress about where we're going and what we're doing. And she was very kind. It was very sweet. We had a really nice conversation, and everybody in the restaurant could hear what was going on. And the next day we get out, we're riding, and it's a really hot day. It's, you know, 100+. We're probably, I don't know, 50 miles right into the ride, Chris. And we're going up this long, gentle, not super steep grade. And there's a car pulled over on the right-hand side. And you can, and it, we, you know, it was probably, I don't know, a mile away or something. We're pulling up, and all of a sudden we see there, and there's this couple from the night before who were out touring around Nebraska and that kind of stuff. They had heard about our trip, and they're standing at the top of the hill with like, they had like some Snickers bars and some, you know, some drinks. And they thought, well, we just thought you guys might use some food or drink at this point. Oh, and they just thought it was the coolest thing. And we're like, and they didn't know us. They didn't, they were just people who heard about the, what we were doing. And they were just, it was just the kindest, sweetest thing. And,
nice.
And so we had way more of that kind of experience than, than the stray dog chasing us.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, it's funny. We're talking about safety, and I, you know, you, of course, on the road, you're always concerned about cars, but, you know, off road gets into a different type of safety, you know, and you could get into trouble. I know we do this, there's a gravel race out here, the Wild West, right? It's up in Red Bluff. And I had a crash, and my shifter broke, and I got stuck in this, you know, I was like, I was just stuck for hours. And the guys that I was stuck with, they were two guys that they do a two-way radio service. They're retired guys. They do two-way radio service, but they were police guys, both of them.
Okay.
And so I'm sitting there for, you know, we're just trying to find stuff to talk about because I'm waiting on this SAG vehicle that's never coming. And the guy says, yeah, well, it's actually pretty surprising that you're able, the route that he has opened up for today, because you go into some areas where if you win in those areas, you're taking your life in your own hands. So there's apparently there's some drugs being grown out in some areas.
Oh, great.
You know, right? So
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So you could see where if you're charting a route across the, you know, to do all this gravel backcountry, you know, you could end up with some unsavory kind of conditions.
You might, involving
a car.
Yeah, you find yourself not welcome.
Safety is always a challenge.
Yeah, is that the music from Deliverance that I hear?
Yeah. These guys had some stories. It was actually a lot of fun. Even though I was sitting there and freezing my butt off in my Lycra. Nobody had a blanket or anything. So I was just listening to these stories. But
I guess my point to that whole thing was that I don't want to bypass the city. I'm just saying the towns because I want that experience. But I'm just saying with the gravel bike, Chris, to your Europe experience, it just means there's one less thing you have to worry about. Right.
Right.
And it's just affords you a little bit more flexibility
Well, and I'm sure even if you did off road, you would have to come into town to get your hotel or your food. You know, so you still have those experiences probably where you're interacting with city folk.
Yeah. And I think all the way across the country, really, I mean, the number of places where we had like a lot of tight interaction with cars, you're really worried about it. It was really just on the coast, you know, it was when we were leaving and there's a lot of people. And when we're getting to Boston, there's a lot of people. And everything in between, we were in places that were pretty rural, where traffic was pretty light. And, you know, even when we're on pretty main roads. So there was very few places where we were on the road where I really felt like, oh, this isn't safe. You know, this is a really bad idea. What are we doing here? Mm-hmm.
Part of that is the research we'd done on the route we were taking.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
absolutely.
Part of that is being a conscientious cyclist. You know,
yeah.
We're if a car's coming, we're going to get behind one another. We're not going to stay too abreast. And so, you know, I don't know. We all ride here a lot. And I've always found that if I'm conscientious, most times then people appreciate that. And they are. It's you know, and that's not to say everyone, but, you know, most people recognize that. And all right, you know, so that doesn't mean you're not going to get the person who's having a bad day. But in most cases.
Yeah.
You should see it, Mike. There was, I think if I'm not mistaken, there was a cool picture of you guys. You put your back tires in the Pacific Ocean, right? Mm-hmm. And when you rolled out, and then was it your front tire in the
Atlantic?
My dad did the same thing with his buddies when he did his trip. That's what inspired that idea for sure.
Very cool.
I don't want to get off of that, but you know, because I think we could talk. It's like any party I go to, it's always cyclists, so we could talk for hours. But here you go, you do this, and a couple years later, you get this notion: I'm going to go from the border, Canadian border, to the Mexican border, and I'm super interested in that because that's an idea that I think I could probably sell, right? You know, support or no support. If I got someone to support me, I think I'm like, okay, I'm going to be gone for a little time, but I'm going to be within the state of California. So when did that happen and what brought that on?
I think what brought it on was we had such an amazing trip going.
Oh, it was incredible. Yeah.
I mean, it was my number one bucket highlight of my life kind of thing, mm-hmm. excluding, you know, kids and marriage and all that stuff.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And all that, yeah. But
it's okay. Mike can edit that part. Don't worry about it.
So we're in that thing, Dave, where it's like, we want to relive that experience. We're feeling.
Yeah.
And so we started talking about it. And by that time we had some other good friends, Mike Franzen, who you know, and some other friends who also were like, oh, that sounds great. We want to do that. And so that's what kind of grew out, that Matt and I wanted to do something again. We weren't sure what. Then we started talking, well, let's go north to south. We went east to west or west to east. And then we had some friends who wanted to do it. So it kind of grew from that. And that was a lot of that whole idea of trying to recapture that joy and that feeling we had, and we did, you know, and so
you did. Okay.
And it took us a month, you know, but what's interesting about that route is, you know, cause we kind of went through the Cascades and the Sierras to get to Tahoe. And then we came to Danville and went down the coast. So we had almost as much climbing on that trip, which was half 2000 miles that we had on the trip across country, which was 4,000 miles.
Surprise. Because,
you know, you're going down the mountain. Anyway, yeah. So
and 2/3 of it was in the first half. So that the start of that trip was that was a piece of work.
If you see Mike and talk to Mike or Matt, they will tell you one of their hardest days of cycling ever was going up Mount Hood.
Yeah.
Oh, no kidding.
Oh. Okay.
And it was because the day before we had had this dirt road
incident.
We had gone like 120 miles. We had climbed by Mount. It was a crazy day, and then the next day we got to go up Mount Hood, and it was just like, if you look at the adventure cycling, Dave, they have two great routes. One's the coastal route the whole way. The other one's more the Cascades route, and then goes down to the Sierras the whole way. We kind of made our own, where we're going to do half the mountain, half at the beginning, hit Tahoe. and then want to go down and then do the coastal route. So we want to kind of combine and do half mountain, half coastal. And that was a really good way to do it.
Yeah.
I'm glad it was a good experience too, because you could imagine like, okay, this is going to be great. You know, Mike, you got to join us because this is, and if it wasn't as fun, then, you know.
It's a little bit more challenging. I definitely missed the trip with Matt where it's just the two of us. We cycled together forever. We know each other extremely well. And just the synergy of two people versus the synergy of five riders, three spouses. That was a different dynamic. So it was great in its own way. But the journey with Matt just across country was
cool. And I would also add that if you're going to do something like that, it is great to have a very dear friend who is a world-class organizer. And that is Chris. Like, Chris is an incredible organizer of things, and he's an incredible communicator with people. And that's where the blog thing came from and that kind of stuff. And I think, and both of us, I think, start with just generally a positive attitude and like, hey, when things go wrong, we're going to figure it out. It's going to be good. And so if you're going to do it with people, then having people who've got who can adapt and adjust and deal with adversity and are resilient and that kind of stuff has a really big impact. And so that's what made the adventure fun. The second trip was, it was incredible experience. We had a great time, but it was much more logistically and operationally and people challenging. Cause we had, you know, with Chris and I, it was usually he and I, and maybe two other people who were the SAG. So you had, you know, four or five people and a couple segments where you had a lot, but on the Canada, Mexico trip, we had, you know, it was a rolling party of, you know, five, you know, like at least 10 people. So, you know, the logistics of it were way more difficult.
So on the second trip, Chris, did you blog every day too?
I did. Mm-hmm. I did. And actually, even on the trip in Europe, my wife and I did as well. Couple things, Mike. One, it was like a chance to journal and keep this memory.
Right. Yeah.
And so if I look back on it now, I'm so thankful that we did it. And I did a lot of it, but I didn't do all of it. Other people contributed as well. And then Matt's sister was spectacular. She took
Can you guys see that? Oh, no, you can't.
No,
no. No, you can't say, oh, there it is. There it is.
Yeah, so she made a book. She made a book.
Oh, wow.
Her trip. And so every summer I look through it. But So the journaling was great for us as memento. It also, like we talked about, family and friends. And then what's fun is every now and then still, I mean, this trip was, 11 years ago. People still see the blog and comment on it. Because they'll find it when they're trying to ride across country. So I'll get questions here and there from the blog about, hey, I'm thinking about riding across country. What about this? You know, so.
Well, I have a idea on the type of commitment that is. I did last summer we did this European trip.
Yeah.
And we did the French, Italian, and Swiss Alps. And
oh my God. That sounds amazing.
It was. And it was we didn't have a tour guide or anything. It was myself and a buddy, and my buddy did all the planning. So he had all the days, all the routes, he bought all the hotels. He did all the, and I basically just, he's got a cubicle job and he was able to basically spend time on it where I couldn't, you know, and I just compartmentalized the whole thing to him. But when we get over there, and so the first day we do Gavia Pass, right? And it's amazing. And we have this unbelievable experience at the top of the mountain. There's this little chalet there and this guy whips out an accordion and the whole place is singing these Italian folk songs.
Amazing.
Like, it's like 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Tuesday. And like, it's like, what is going on here, man? These people know how to live here in Italy, you know?
Yeah.
But so we have this amazing day and then we come back to the hotel, you know, and then there's a lot of driving because we were driving, you know, from one mountain zone to another, you know, and it's a lot of driving, even if it's only 20 miles. It's 20 miles of ziggy zaggy, you know? And so, anyway, the days were long. We get in and, my, my travel, or my buddy, he was filming everything. He's doing all this Instagram stuff, all this stuff. And like, I would do a little bit, but I only had so, there's only so much in the tank, you know?
Right.
You
gotta, yeah.
I'm always thinking like the next day, it's like, okay, well, let's, I mean, I'm going to get up here at 6 so we can get on the mountain by 7:30, you know? And, but yeah, this guy, he was so dedicated and it took so much time. I just can't imagine doing an entire trip. We were only there for 2 weeks. And, but I can't imagine doing a 60-day trip and then being tethered to that blog each and every day. I could see where it might be cathartic on some level, but it also has got to be a pretty big grind to get it done, right?
There were days. Matt would step in and do it, and then we'd have sometimes a guest writer. But, you know, you know how it is. You get in a rhythm. It's like, all right, you know, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to write this, and, you know, kind of figure it out. And so. Yeah.
Well, you know, well, my rhythm was, I'm not going to do it at all. And then when I got home, well, I made a post for each individual day. Right. And I had 10 photos. So I would have it. So everybody that follows me, whatever, they could have it. But it was really more of a selfish thing where it's like, I want to be able to go relive each day. And, you know, so I wanted to have it recorded somewhere. But it took me probably 2 weeks after we got back to get that all done, just because it's a lot.
I'd say, you know, there's when you do it like we did it, and I should say Chris, it becomes part of the ride. So as you're riding, you're actually the whole time, almost every day, you're thinking about, oh, this is going to be great for the blog. That's good. We got to get a picture of this. And we talk about it through the course of the day, because you'd be like, oh, this is going to be something that would be really fun or cool or special to share. And Chris has just an incredible talent for just being able to organize all those thoughts, put them down quickly. And then I just took a lot longer to kind of absorb and process and kind of think about the experience. And so I was more like the weekly contributor, where it just took me more time. It was just the way I process stuff. Where Chris was just really, really efficient and effective.
Mine was more like the daily recap. Hey, here's what we did and saw today.
Yeah.
And Matt would kind of give a weekly reflection more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's probably, that's a good way to describe it, I'd say. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a great, it was a fun part of the experience after a while. But yes, there was definitely days where like,
Right.
I'm going to say though that, and Mike, this is not intended as criticism, but, you know, and I'm not breaking your balls at all here, but I think it also speaks to the understanding and the dynamic that Chris and Matt have. And so you're going into it with the same expectations and the same kind of mindset. You know, Mike, the way you ride, it's like, I'm all in. Like if I'm on the, you know, if I'm on Out the West, I'm going to pin this thing, right? So it's more about the ride as opposed to two guys that know each other really well and are just out having a grand old time. So I think that they pull into town at 3:00 in the afternoon and there is something left in the tank. It's not about,
right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think it's important, you guys would know this better, but, and that I think it maybe is a reflection of the second trip you did. There's got to be an expectation, agreed upon expectation, that this is how we're going to ride. And this is what, you know.
Yeah. I mean, a simple example of that is, you know, I love photography and I love taking pictures of stuff, landscape and that kind of thing. And are you guys still there? I think Dave just froze up on me. Is that me?
We can hear you.
But you're the one who's frozen.
Yeah, you're frozen, but we hear you fine. Or we were.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, go.
All right.
No,
well, I
no
think
pressure.
What Matt was going to say. No.
I'm here until Thursday.
Because Dave, that is an excellent point. And, you know, because what happened was.
Oh, there we go.
You know, I think Matt and I had this. We knew that it was about the journey and experiencing the journey. And when we then had other people join us for the Canada ride, we had to be very specific. Like, This is not about how fast we can do it, how hard we can
right.
do it.
Right.
Know, setting the Strava record. This right. is about enjoying the journey.
Yeah.
And so Matt and I had always had that synergy. And now he's back. So I'll let him tell about his photography.
Right. Sorry.
Good job, like, Chris.
Good ad.
I got well done. Chris. Me or you guys?
Yeah.
No,
you're not a rookie. You're good at this.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure where I stopped off, but it was just like Chris and I quickly, you know, I like to take pictures of beautiful landscape, and you know, Chris is like, if there's a picture without a person, why have a picture? Like, because it's a way to document, you know, the experience of the people, and it brings back that memory where I get a charge out of like Mount Shasta,
yeah,
right. And, but Chris was just, he was really awesome and just saying, hey, I know this is something that's important to you that you want to include in this thing, and so he was incredibly tolerant of. Like, hey, I want to stop because this is an incredible photograph, and we don't, you know, and then, but we did, you know, we had all the combinations with people and that kind of thing too. So we had, there were things about the experience that we both wanted that, you know, I think we knew about before going into the ride. So that was really helpful.
Yeah. That's really good cool. insight, Dave, about Mike's writing versus what we're describing. Because I found that with all my friends I ride with, you know, Matt and I have a great synergy on it, but you kind of have to have that, I don't know, pre-ride agreement almost, like this
yeah,
is
right.
what this is going to be.
Yeah.
Like, we are going to go and like hammer, or, hey, you know what? We're going to ride, and we're going to go down to Pleasanton, and we're stop for a coffee and a roll. And there's right. value in both, right?
Yeah.
There's for value sure. in like, okay, hey, how fast can I make up to the second ranger station at Diablo, you know? Okay.
Yep.
We're
trying to kill each other today. Or I don't know, whatever. But luckily Matt and I have that, you know, and with most of the people, right, you know, it's kind of evolved, particularly as we've got older and we're not training for racing anymore. That it's like, all right, well, let's talk about what the ride's going to be.
Yeah.
And that's why I think, like, as cool as Ram would be to do, you're not going to see anything, right? Because you're just maniacally focused on getting there. And that, you know, I make this, this is a stupid analogy all the time, but I get very frustrated when these families, you know, the spring break rolls around, and you know, so they jump on a plane, they go to Paris to see the Louvre. And they've got their 3 and 4 year olds with them. Like, they don't care about the Louvre.
Right.
Like, they're not going to appreciate it. There's so much of this country. There's so much of this country that's so beautiful that I'd rather do it your way and see the things that I want to see, as opposed to put my head down and one long straight road and then get to the East Coast and look back and go, I don't remember a thing.
Yeah. You have to do what's right for you. You know, Dave, probably like all of us here, like, sounds like Mike, you've talked about Ram. We definitely talked about it. We have good friends, John Hansen and Ken Mozak. The four of us had raced together, both mountain bike and road. And we talked about doing Ram. Hey, we'll be a 4-man team. We'll do it. We'll get the motor home. We'll do the thing. And then, you know, you start reading about like the guys taping the stick to hold their head up. And we're like, this isn't so good anymore.
Yeah.
And,
where's the fun part?
We went through that kind of discussion of like, do we want to, that's so different than what we did. That was going to be like, did the four of us want to have this accomplishment of trying to do Ram? And then I was like, well, forget the 4-man. Let's go to an 8-man team. Let's go to the corporate team where we
are. Right.
Yeah. And
so ultimately, we just hit the point where we decided that wasn't something we were going to do. And we did this instead.
Yeah, I almost think like you can't even really compare the two, because it's you are from point A to point B. You're kind of doing the same thing. But with Ram, it's just, it's a race. You're just like focused. There's going to be camaraderie. There's going to be support, and there'll be like a team element, and there'll be some dynamics out of that you'll get that maybe on your trip you didn't get as much. But your trip is just like the dream. Right. Where you have this extra time, you're going to take a day wherever it makes sense. You're going to take that extra day and enjoy. You're going to hit these milestone places along the way. That's not Ram at all. You know, it's a completely different animal. Yeah. So
I get that. I get the racing thing. I, again, we did it for a short period. And then we kind of like, okay, having a family and having a career and trying right. to be competitive in bike racing don't seem to go together.
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah.
And, you know, and so Matt and I kind of migrated a little bit more into, hey, we're going to try and go ride hard, but yeah. we're going to try and enjoy.
Yeah.
Although Chris and I did have an idea that we thought we'd float with like the UCI or something like that of having another racing category that said we need to compete with people who have big jobs, travel a lot, prioritize their marriage and their family experience. and then we'll race against those guys.
Yeah. Yeah. You just need a good acronym for it, you know?
Yeah. Know, like,
right. Yeah. Right. So come up with a cat. Whatever.
But I definitely is. Get the rambling. I completely understand the appeal of it. It's
yeah.
just
yeah. a
different thing.
Different thing.
Yeah. Hey, I'm gonna go yeah. train for this and do this for a week. You know, it's about what it takes. And I get that. I just that point in my life passed by and I didn't do
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well to Dave's go ahead. Go ahead, Matt.
No, I was just gonna say, I mean, it's just a thought I've had about this whole trip because one of the questions that we got from people that we met all across the trip without question was, man, what kind of jobs do you guys have that would allow you to be gone for 60 days? You know,
yeah.
and Chris and I were both in very fortunate circumstances with, you know, I was a partner in a small company and Chris was working for a smaller company. He had, you know, a great relationship with the owner of the company. And so we were able to get the flexibility to do that. And so part of doing this to me that was one of the consequences was it was an inspiring thing for people to believe that you could do big things. Because most of the time people take off big chunks of time in our country is when you're sick or something yeah. has happened other than having a baby for, you know, family and that kind of stuff. Most people don't think that you can have a big dream and go do it while you're actively working. And so like, you know, part of the thing, the message that I had for people was like, you know, dream big and then decide, and then you're going to take the risk. I'll never forget walking into my partner's office and going, by the way, this is not asking for permission. I'm going to go do this. And this is how we're going to make it work.
Yeah.
And he was like, okay. All right. I'm like, and I'll leave. I mean, I was ready to say I'll leave and I'm going to go take the time off. But if you are good at your job, you know, people don't want to lose good people. And so, you know, part of the notion to me was, hey, you know, dream big, do big things. And you'll be surprised at how you can make those things happen. And at any rate, that was something that was surprised by the question all the time. And then I had several people tell me afterwards, like, now I want to go do something big like this. You showed us how it could be done. And that was cool.
Matt, you just made my life easier because now I'm looking at my thing saying, okay, an hour 45 into it because I have to create the sound bite. You just got the sound bite.
I think anybody listening to this could relate to what you just said there.
Yeah.
You know, like dream big, go for it. You know, for my trip to Europe, it was the guy that I went with. We raced Cat Fours in high school at the Early Bird Crits. And we used to read Winning Magazine and dream yeah. about going to Europe one day. And that yeah. was our trip, you know, it was like, and it was only 2 weeks, you know, but that was a big dream
yeah.
and it was hard to do. And,
yeah.
But you know, the people around us that love us, they supported us. Yeah. There's, if you set your mind to it, you dream big, you share your dream with others. Yeah. You can,
yeah, you can spend your life going, well, how, why not? No, that's not going to work. That's, they got to spend your life trying to figure out how,
yeah.
you know, that's the thing. And once Chris and I said, we want to do this, then it was figuring out how, and that was part of the fun.
That's yeah. awesome.
There we go.
Yeah, that is awesome. So let me ask you this. So two incredible, trips of a lifetime for the you guys.
Oh yeah.
Is there a third?
There could
yeah,
be.
Yeah, you know, I would love there to be. You know, I did take a third with my wife, and
uh-huh.
I came back, and I was talking with Matt and Mike and my other friends going, you have to come do this. The whole writing in Europe
oh, thing yeah.
And it started, you know, and the B2 was at a boulangerie every day with the pastry and the cappuccino. It's like, it was unbelievable. And the writing over there is very conducive. And so, Mike, I would tell you, like, that's the place to take your wife with the e-bike.
Yeah.
You know, it was, we saw so many people over there, and older people and younger people on e-bikes. Yeah. And, you know, and I'm talking about, you know, on the trail, and they've got their gear. So yes, I would love there to be. I think we'll see. You know, I remember I'm a relatively new grandfather, and we were in this little place in France, and there was a family there. It was his grandmother, grandfather, parents, and two little kids, and the grandfather was helping the little granddaughter ride, and they were going to ride 20 miles a day along the canals. I'm like, yeah, that's it. That's what I want to do. I want to go with my grandkids and my buddy Matt and his family and go do this.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
See, Mike, there you go. It's all marketing. It's you just have to tell Stella, it's, honey, it's not a bike ride. It's date night. Right.
Right. There you go. I mean, there's also some smaller versions of things. You know, we got a bunch of this crew together. We did the trip to Canada, Mexico with, and we spent a week in Asheville, North Carolina, and did some riding. And Chris and I have talked a little bit about trying to ride the Natchez Trace because he's living in Nashville part time now. And that's got a historical part to it. And there's, you know, when you look at the map on Chris's wall, you know, it feels like it would be finished if you had a route from like Maine to Florida on it possibly, but, that one's a bigger one. Like, you know, Chris, I'm going to be 61 and, you know, Chris is a couple of years older, and this is a lot easier when I was 49. We'll see. I mean, there's definitely more adventures in store, but they might look a little different.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Well, Chris, I got a little taste of what you're talking about with Europe. We did the Sella Ronda ride, which is in the Dolomites, and it's where you go. It's a huge ride. I mean, there were thousands and thousands of people on this ride, and many of them, like you say, were on e-bikes. It was a lot of older people, younger people. You could tell, like, non-cyclists were
just going and riding like the Stelvio and things like that up in the Dolomites.
Well, the Sella Ronda is the Sella Pass, the Campagnolo, Pordoi.
Okay.
And Sella.
Big mountains, yeah.
Yeah, four big mountains. I think it's, I want to say it's like maybe 40 miles. And a fair amount of climbing, you know, as you can imagine. But yeah, it was like families, and mm-hmm. there were like hardcore riders in there, of course. But it was just cool to see like this. Cycling's just viewed a lot different over there, I feel like. You know, here there's not a, I felt like there's a genuine love of cycling in Europe. Like there were many times where we were riding out in the middle of, you know, on our way to Mont Ventoux or whatever it was. And you'd see like this home in the middle of nowhere, you know, maybe by itself or maybe with three other homes in a little, and there'd be bicycles like painted, like a yellow painted bicycle that was part of their yard, you know, that like yard art, you know, right. Or in the Giro areas, the Giro d'Italia, there were pink bikes painted on people's houses and stuff. And so there's just a little different relationship with a bicycle in Europe that, man, I would love to see that happen more over here, but I don't know if we'll ever get there as a society, but, you know, that's all the more reason to go to Europe, I guess, you know, to
for sure. Yeah.
Get a taste of that, you know, but to Dave's point, there's a lot of great stuff here.
Oh yeah,
you guys obviously have seen more of it than most. I feel like we should probably wrap it up. I mean, we've kept you guys quite a while. This might be one of our longest podcasts, but I feel like we could talk even more.
And,
you know,
and like, here we are, and here we go, and we're still not done, right? But
Well, guys, I can't thank you enough. It was really nice to get to meet both of you. And I know you've known Dave for a lot longer, but what a tremendous adventure. And it's really, Matt, I think you summed it up so well about, you know, dream big, It's going to be inspirational for a lot of people to hear that message and what you guys have been able to do together. That's really cool. It's a great story about friendship too.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I mean, you feel blessed to have such a dear friend to be able to share that kind of experience with was quite a gift for sure.
Great.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah.
Thank you guys. Really.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for joining us and we'll see you next time.
All right. Take care, guys. Bye-bye.
Peace.
If you like what we're doing here at Psychojerks Podcast and you would like to support us, please check out our website at psychojerkspodcast.buzzsprout.com. Hit the subscribe button. We shout out all subscribers, so get on it. Another way you can support the podcast would be by giving us a 5-star review on whatever streaming platform that you're listening on. We appreciate you. Thanks so much.
Psychojerks.
Hey, get out of the road, dummy.
Psychojerks Podcast.